tuned into Quick Charge, the high voltage podcast bringing you the top stories in electric vehicles and sustainable energy daily. And it's all powered by Electrek. Welcome back to another episode of Quick Charge. It's June 24th, 2024. I'm your host, Joe Boris. We're going to start today off with some Tesla Cybertruck news, and it is not good. Elon Musk haters in Florida have vandalized dozens of Cybertrucks. Now, this is not something that anyone should condone, no matter what your public views are on Elon or no matter what you think of the guy. Tesla is not Elon. Elon is not Tesla. And all you've done at this point is effectively vandalize the property of people who are spending their hard-earned money. So there's no defending this kind of action. But that said, it does illustrate the kind of divisive person that Elon has become. You'll see this was posted a couple days ago. It's already got more than 400 comments. This is our top story by far over the weekend. And there's a lot of activity in the comments there. You really need to go check it out. For sure, this is something where you've got a very polarizing individual, a very polarizing vehicle, and it's not the kind of attention that most people, mainstream buyers, seem to want. And if you're still trying to convince investors and shareholders and everybody else that this is going to be a mass-produced mainstream product, behavior like this is not really the kind of thing you want to see. Nobody's out there spraying F Aikido all over Toyota Camrys, right? It's just not the same kind of vibe. This is definitely something that speaks to some larger issues with Elon's image, Tesla's image, and may have something to do with why Tesla sales are down as much as they are. We'll get to that in a little bit. We're not quite done with the Cybertruck. A number of people have been having accidents in their Cybertrucks. There's plenty of reasons for this that have nothing to do with it being a Cybertruck. They're accidents, right? If you have enough miles, enough people on enough roads, two cars are going to crash into each other. So this is not something that's surprising. But what is surprising is that the damage that seems to be leading these vehicles to be quote unquote totaled doesn't seem at first glance to be that severe. So a couple of Tesla Cybertrucks recently went on the internet through the IAA website. And you can see what that damage looks like. In this case, obviously, we have both airbags deployed. It seems to have been a pretty significant front end hit. I don't think this is necessarily surprising that a vehicle with this kind of damage would be totaled. I think if you had a brand new F-150 or Ram pickup, had a front end collision like this where the airbags were deployed, I think it makes sense on something like this, especially with as low miles as this one had, with 3932 on the odometer. But still, we're talking about a vehicle that's being marketed as like the ultimate post-apocalyptic survival thing. So when you see something that looks visually not that severe leading it to be totaled, it does kind of start to raise questions about how these vehicles are actually put together. Moving on, there's another vehicle that was flooded, and they show where the flood line was well below the interior cabin. The interior doesn't seem to have been flooded so far. And the reason that Fred calls this into attention, of course, is that Elon has often made claims about how Tesla vehicles could float, and specifically how the Cybertruck could work for short distances as a boat. So it's tough to be able to sit here and say, on the one hand, this is a post-apocalyptic survival vehicle that can function as a boat, and on the other hand, sitting in water for more than 30 minutes is going to void it out and eventually cause us to total it. So again, this makes total sense. Nobody is sitting here suggesting that the insurance company should subject themselves to the kind of liability that could come from continuing to cover a vehicle like this and continuing to repair a vehicle like this. But it speaks to the image, it speaks to the marketing, and I think a lot of people are starting to get really surprised by how seemingly easy it is to total one of these things. And again, all of this only is worth mentioning because of the marketing surrounding the truck. And you can say, yes, well, Tesla doesn't have a marketing department, but of course it does. When Elon stands on stage and throws a baseball through the window trying to say that the windows are bulletproof, that's 100% marketing. And part of that marketing involves things like savings. Fuel savings are factored into the kind of cost estimations that Tesla asks you to make when they try to sell you a vehicle. But despite having that focus and emphasis on value, as soon as the Tesla Model 3 Long Range became eligible for a $7,500 rebate, Tesla effectively raised the price by about $3,200 more. Now, this was not a direct Tesla is raising the MSRP. Tesla had previously been subsidizing the interest rate, effectively bringing it down to about 1.99 or 2.99%, depending on the model. Well, now that the Tesla qualifies for higher tax credit, Tesla has decided that they no longer want to incentivize that interest rate, making the vehicle about $3,200 more to finance than it would have been prior to the tax credit. The Tesla Model 3 Long Range is now listed at 6.39% APR on loans up to 72 months. Model 3 rear-wheel drive continues to offer 1.99 APR with a 60-month option at 2.99. Even though the Model 3 Long Range is now $7,500 cheaper, like we just said, the higher interest rate is a party pooper, eating up potential savings. The folks at Cars Direct estimate that on a five-year loan, thanks to the 6.39 interest rate, the Model 3 Long Range has more of a $4,200 advantage than a $7,500 advantage. And obviously, if you take that out to 6 years, which is what the 72 months is, it's even less of an advantage. So that's not what you want to hear. But at the end of the day, it seems like Tesla needs to get as many pennies in the bank as they can, especially since they are expected to have another tough quarter for deliveries. Last quarter was a rough one for Tesla. This is obviously Fred Lambert writing about this. The automaker delivered 386,810 vehicles, down 20% quarter over quarter and 8.5% year over year. Now, there are a lot of factors that play into this, but at the end of the day, we have to kind of all admit that we are not seeing that 50%, you know, growth upon growth upon growth towards that quote unquote infinite demand that we all at one point seemed to think that Tesla was going to continue to deliver. And it's also worth noting that the Tesla Cybertruck, despite getting closer to series production, is not adding to the bottom line. This is a brand new product in the hottest market in the United States and North America, really. And it's not driving sales. If anything, the Cybertruck's leading to blowback on other models that are more mainstream acceptable because of the association that they have with that Cybertruck. So the most recent estimates from analysts are already significantly below the 450,000 delivery consensus that we were looking at for the quarter. And that's only continued to go down by the end of the week. Europe seems to be a problem for Tesla this year, according to registration trackers. Tesla is more than 60,000 deliveries off from its record year 2023 so far in 24. Now, if you look over there, you'll see that light blue line of deliveries. That light blue line is 2023, obviously massively over any other year in Tesla's history. Now, 2024, it's important to note, would still be a record year if this year had been 2023. They're over 2021 deliveries. They're over 2022 deliveries. They're still selling more EVs than nearly every other manufacturer. Obviously, BYD is still selling more. But it is significant to see that June number of deliveries from that light blue line to that dark blue line and just think that that could carry through throughout the end of the year. It's not looking good for those guys. Now, obviously, they're a long way from going away. I don't want any of this to be interpreted as Tesla's going away, Tesla's going bankrupt. None of that's happening. But it is clear that we are reaching some kind of market saturation on these vehicles, or whether it's the fact that everybody who wanted a Tesla has already bought one, whether people are moving on to different brands, or whether they're simply more comfortable transacting business at a dealership. Because remember, 95% of all new cars sold in America are still sold at a dealer where people can drive it, test drive it, negotiate on price. All those things people claim to not want to do, 95% of them are still doing it. So all of those factors come into play. We have to analyze all those things as we wrap our heads around what's happening here and as we look forward into Tesla's future. And it's important to note that electric vehicle sales aren't down everywhere. So we talked about this a little bit last week. EV sales are going pretty well if you're a company other than Tesla. As if to underscore that point, NIO is expected to hit its Q2 delivery target after a record 20,500 vehicles were sold in May. Volkswagen is doubling its ID. Buzz production as the three-row electric van hits the U.S. market. And the Volvo EX30 tops the Mini in Europe as low-cost EV sales continued to surge in May. So again, we're talking about three very different companies in three very different markets. and they are going gangbusters. So this is not an EV market slowdown. This is not to imply that EV demand is down. In fact, EV demand is up 14% year over year, which is outpacing the market growth. It's right around 7.1, 7.2%. So EV sales are doing fine. It's just the one massive player who's having some trouble lately. And finally, closing off today's report, Wrigley Field has added EV charging and highlights signage problems. Now, this is in my hometown. I'm a Chicago guy. Wrigley Field is here. They've recently added 10 LG Switch chargers here. This is great stuff, right? You always want to see very public, very visible EV charging stations. And especially in a Chicago landmark like this, where people are excited, they're going to go, they're going to spend a couple hours, really emphasize that level two charging in many ways is not only more appropriate, but a better customer experience than DC fast charging. There's a big push that says we have to have DC fast charging for every gas station. Obviously not the case. Cars are parked 90% of their lives. The ability to charge at level two, even level one, should be more than enough for most people, especially if they park somewhere for 2 to 3 hours, whether that's shopping mall, movie theater, sporting events like this. This is great stuff. But what I really wanted to talk about, and what I did get to talk about in the article, is the signage. If you look at this, there is no way that driving past Wrigley Field at any kind of speed, you would be able to see that there was EV charging there. And I think this speaks to a larger issue in terms of EV infrastructure and people's ability to trust the EV infrastructure. Because when I'm driving down the road, I know that there are gas stations everywhere. They're not on every corner. They're not even every mile necessarily, but they are there when I need them. And the reason I know that is because they won't let me forget it. This is a picture of a town in Pennsylvania right off of I-70. And in this photograph, I count 9 places that I can get gasoline, maybe 10 if I count that Petrico and that sign for the truck wash, because I know over there there's a Flying J and a TA Travel Plaza. But think about what this says to people who are driving. Even if you're not there to buy gas, even if you think of gasoline or diesel as a spur of the moment purchase, you know that you'll be able to get gas if and when you need it or if and when you want it. The same is true for Starbucks. You may not want Starbucks coffee right there in that moment, but you're not going to sit down and plan a road trip across the country if you're an ICE driver and say, where are the Starbucks that I want to stop at? You just know that you're going to see a Starbucks somewhere along the way and you'll be able to stop there because you see the signs constantly. The same is true for gas and diesel. Now, in this town, within this photograph, I checked this out on PlugShare. It's in the article. There's about 28 public-facing chargers, and there's a few more behind-the-fence chargers, specifically at the Holiday Inn Express, and again at that TA Travel Plaza, the USPS, and one of the Caterpillar dealers that's there. So there is more EV charging than you might think, but there are no signs. There's not a charge point sign. There's not a 60-foot illuminated EVgo or Electrify America sign. And I think until we have those, we're going to continue to have a hard time convincing people that the electric vehicle infrastructure is going to be able to support their needs wherever they go. That's all I got for today, June 24th. If you like what you heard, be sure to like and subscribe. If you don't like what you heard, be sure to go down into the comments so I can argue with you properly. Have a great day.